This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The outbreak of COVID-19 pandemic presented the most challenging period ever in the history of aviation.
That's Gabriel Lessa, president of the African Civil Aviation Commission, which says the continent's airlines lost more than $10.2 billion last year and expects to lose $8.2 billion this year. Details coming up. Also, because of the new COVID variant Omicron, the U.S. plans stricter testing rules for international visitors. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Here's our top story. With a fast-spreading surge in COVID-19 infections from the new Omicron variant, the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention plans to bring together health ministers to plan a coordinated approach, including how to get more Africans vaccinated. This week, the continent has reported 52,000 cases, with 31,000 in South Africa. Omicron also has been reported in Botswana, Ghana, Nigeria, and South Africa, along with dozens of countries around the world. Speaking at a virtual press briefing today, John Nkengasong, director of the African CDC, said there was no need to panic and added that medical workers have a lot of tools to fight the new variant. But with only about 10% of the continent's population getting at least one shot and just 7% fully vaccinated, people have to use the tools. The White House has responded for the first known case in the United States of the new COVID-19 variant, Omicron, by announcing it plans stricter testing rules for international visitors. Reuters has reported that U.S. airlines have been instructed to hand over the names of passengers arriving from Southern Africa, where Omicron was first identified 2 weeks ago, to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The first known Omicron infection in the U.S., according to health officials, is a fully vaccinated person who recently returned to California from South Africa. The South African government says travel restrictions imposed on it and its neighbors are unjustified and discriminatory and want to stop Omicron from spreading. Darren Taylor has more.
Political analysts in South Africa say the vilification, as they describe it, of the region of Southern Africa because of Omicron has done immense harm to its relations with the U.S. Officials close to President Cyril Ramaphosa told VOA he's furious at the position taken by Washington. Presidential COVID advisor and world-renowned South African epidemiologist Salim Abdul Karim told an online news conference his country deserves international support after identifying Omicron, not isolation.
It is outrageous that countries are punishing South Africa for being open and transparent and sharing scientific information to help countries control the spread of the virus.
Karim says travel bans as a strategy to slow the spread of a variant are not based on science.
If you take the Delta variant, within a matter of 3 weeks from the first reported case, it was present in 53 countries. So you can imagine by Friday this week, we're going to be somewhere in the region of 40, 50 countries reporting this variant. So if you're going to ban travel from South Africa, you have to ban travel from those 50-odd countries because they also got this variant.
South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD, says early data indicates Omicron's more transmissible than previous forms of COVID-19. It appears to be driving a resurgence of infections in Gauteng province, which includes the country's biggest city, Johannesburg. But the NICD says current vaccines should protect people who get Omicron against serious disease, hospitalization, and death. Global health authorities insist travel restrictions are necessary to allow them to prepare for probable Omicron outbreaks. But they've put travel bans on African countries, not many others where the variant's been found, including in Europe. British High Commissioner to South Africa, Anthony Phillips, told local reporters there are good reasons for this apparent disparity.
They are all cases related to travel from Southern Africa, unlike here in South Africa, where unfortunately it seems already clear that the variant is into the community. There is community transmission. That is not the case in those other countries.
But Karim says community transmission is not a sensible basis on which to impose travel bans, which he describes as nonsensical.
We already have a good approach to preventing the spread of the virus through travel. It's a five-pronged strategy, and that is that vaccinated people only travel, a negative test result when you board, you do a symptom check when you board, you wear a mask during the entire flight or sea journey, and then when you arrive at your destination, you have another test. That works. It will prevent most of the infections. Banning doesn't help.
Karim and the South African government want to know what the difference is between Africans meeting these requirements for travel and the rest of the world. Either, say Ramaphosa's officials, administrations such as in the US and United Kingdom don't trust vaccination and COVID test results from Africa, or they consider Africans to be more of a COVID threat to them than other human beings. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
As Southern Africa grapples with travel restrictions from outside the region over the new COVID-19 variant Omicron, aviation experts say special measures are needed to live with the pandemic and help the industry rebound from huge losses. They made comments during the African Civil Aviation Commission session underway in Rwanda's capital, Kigali. Eugene Iwimana has details.
Since South Africa announced the discovery of Omicron last week, major international airlines have halted the flights to the country and others in the region in what the UN chief has called travel apartheid. Rwandan President Paul Kagame echoes with his South African counterpart Cyril Ramaphosa that travel bans were unjustified. Kagame addressed the issue while opening the aviation meeting.
In fact, I agree with, I saw the President of South Africa saying that South Africa, for example, was being punished for being transparent and putting information out there of what they had discovered. But others who had identified it had been quiet and they had discovered that before.
African aviation leaders and experts on the continent warn that travel restrictions are going to undoubtedly increase the losses the industry is already facing. The African Civil Aviation Commission says the continent lost more than $10.2 billion in 2020 alone and expects more than $8.2 billion in red ink for this year. Gabriel Lesser is the president of AFCAC, the African Civil Aviation Commission.
The outbreak of COVID-19 pandemic presented the most challenging period ever in the history of aviation, and AFCAC was no exception. The pandemic negatively affected aviation operations and exerted enormous pressure on the entire aviation industry.
Afuhacha Deji, Togo's transport minister, told the meeting that African airlines need to learn from their global counterparts how to stay afloat and be better prepared to face other variants or shocks in the future. African aviation has great potential. We should all take advantage of developing. That is why we should learn from experiences of other regions around the world that have liberalized their air services. Kagame reiterated the importance of having a more liberalized and better coordinated aviation industry, which also facilitates implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Area.
Of the need we are emphasizing for us to keep finding ways we can be better coordinated so that each country, each airline does not do whatever they think is suitable only for themselves, but rather if better coordinated, seeing how we affect each other and maybe improve our actions on that.
Other officials urged increased investment in infrastructure, easing the visa process and empowering Africa's single air transport market. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali.
Sudan's battered economy has long been an unresolved issue that threatened the transition to democracy even before the military coup. High inflation and shortages of medicine, food and fuel have continued to plague the population. Sudan's efforts to reform its economy and clear overdue debt to the World Bank, allowing it to access new types of financing for the first time in nearly three decades, are now in doubt. The U.S. provided bridge financing of $1.15 billion. Amal El-Tayeb, a Sudanese-American economist, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shadawi how cuts to international aid could deepen the country's economic challenges.
Unfortunately, the cut of international aid will deepen the problems of Sudan with respect to foreign currency, because Sudan had started a very slight progress in the few months before the military coup. Prices had started to go down, and the Sudan had accumulated a reserve with the central bank that exceeds $1.5 billion, which had never happened in the last year or during the governance of the dictatorship of al-Bashir. And going back to square one will deepen the economic problem, increase prices, devalue the currency of Sudan, which may lead to higher prices, which is disastrous when you have an inflationary country like Sudan, which needs any assistance so as to move forward.
So how could the military take over derail Sudan's effort to introduce economic reform, which includes clearance of its overdue payments to the World Bank after the U.S. provided a bridge financing of $1.15 billion, allowing Sudan to access new types of financing for the first time in nearly three decades?
Sudan was deprived from any money from the World Bank in the last three decades because the government of al-Bashir didn't pay the arrears for the loans which Sudan had taken so far, and the debt accumulated by arrears. But we really appreciate the assistance of the donors and mainly the assistance of the United States, which made the payment of arrears in the amount of $1.15 billion to the World Bank on behalf of Sudan, which was a money that was paid from a grant money, like it is a loan for Sudan, but it will open the window for Sudan so as to get finance from the international community, mainly from the World Bank, which had blocked Sudan for the last 30 years.
A month before the military coup, the World Bank held its first visit to Sudan in nearly 40 years when its president, David Malpass, said, over the next year, we will commit about $2 billion in grants to support the government's efforts to reduce poverty and boost economic growth. Would the reinstatement of Prime Minister Hamdok revive such international aid?
I hope so. I hope that the revival of Hamdok and will bring that assistance back, but I doubt it because the grip of power is still in the hand of the military, though their partnership should have had ended on November 17th. And I think that was the main reason of the coup, which had took place on October the 25th. And unfortunately, Sudan may lose the opportunity of engaging with the international community and getting those grants. And I could cite an example, like many countries, like there was an initiative by President Biden of giving Sudan $700 million in support of the transitional government, which was stopped on the morning of October 25th, immediately after the coup. So that money was a grant to Sudan, and other countries may also be reluctant to give money, specifically the World Bank, who has stopped disbursement of all funds and assistance to Sudan on the same day of the coup. And this was announced by the World Bank. So we are losing the $2 billion which the World Bank is providing to Sudan in grants for economic recovery, economic development, and for poverty reduction.
That was Amal El Tayeb, a Sudanese-American economist, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. The United Nations is appealing for a record $41 billion to help 183 million of the world's most vulnerable people suffering from multiple crises, including poverty, hunger, conflict, and the impact of COVID-19. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva on the launch of the UN's Global Humanitarian Plan for 2022.
UN officials report an estimated 274 million people worldwide will require emergency aid and protection next year. This is a 17% increase from 2021. UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Martin Griffiths cites long-lasting conflicts, political instability, failing economies, climate crisis, and the COVID-19 pandemic as the main drivers of need.
There are 45 million people at risk of famine worldwide. 1% of humanity is displaced. And it will be no surprise to any of us that women and girls continue to suffer the most, just as civilians continue to suffer the most in war.
Griffiths says humanitarian aid can limit the worst consequences of existing and emerging crises. For example, he says UN aid brought back 500,000 people from the brink of famine in South Sudan this year. He says aid agencies delivered health care for 10 million people in Yemen and helped vaccinate millions of others against killer diseases in Myanmar. While aid does save lives, he notes it is no solution. He says humanitarian aid does not replace development assistance.
And we see in many countries, Afghanistan is just one most recent example, humanitarian assistance is not a remedy for the people of Afghanistan. It isn't a way to stabilize societies. One of the tragedies of the situation in Ethiopia that we see now as a result of that conflict is the erosion of the development gains of the last 40 years.
Griffiths considers the crisis in Ethiopia to be the most alarming in terms of immediate emergency needs. He notes 9 million people in northern Ethiopia's Amhara, Afar, and Tigray regions are seriously short of food. Of those, he says 5 million people in Tigray are suffering from acute hunger, with 400,000 on the verge of famine. He says he's very worried about the rebel military advance on the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa, warning it will have a seismic effect on the rest of the country, engulfing the entire region. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Botswana's president, Mokwetsi Masisi, says his government will ensure the same-sex couples, including those in prison, are among prioritized groups for necessary services in HIV programs. From Habrone, reporter Bokondisi Dube has the details.
The decision comes in the wake of this week's Court of Appeal ruling upholding a June 29 judgment which decriminalized same-sex relations. During an event to mark World AIDS Day yesterday, Masisi said same-sex couples and other vulnerable groups would be targeted in the fight against the pandemic. The day was commemorated under the theme End Inequalities and AIDS and Pandemics.
As I stated in my State of the Nation address recently, we will continue to emphasize on HIV prevention efforts that prioritize population groups more at risk of acquiring HIV, such as female sex workers, adolescent girls and young women, people with disabilities, and now same-sex couples, including those in prisons.
A landmark 2019 High Court ruling recognized homosexuality. Human rights group Botswana Network on Ethics, Law and HIV/AIDS then wrote to the government demanding that inmates should be provided with condoms. The government rejected the request, arguing the case was still before the courts after the state appealed. After the Court of Appeal put finality on the matter, members of the lesbians, gays and bisexuals of Botswana, Lega people, said they expect the government to involve them more in the HIV fight. Tato Muruti is Lega people's chief executive officer.
I believe that condom provision will be one of the most effective harm reduction interventions in controlling sexually transmitted infections, including HIV/AIDS and also viral hepatitis in prisons. I believe that indeed this move is not in fact a question of whether the president will walk the talk. It is a matter of corporate governance principle.
He adds quality health care for prisoners is key to fighting HIV infections.
I believe that accessible and high-quality prison-based healthcare programs will change the impact of national health and consequently mitigate the burden of STIs in prison. And more than anything, it is quite important for everybody to note that having access to high-quality healthcare services, including condom provision programs, is not only the right of prisoners to health, but also is a move towards achieving the Sustainable Development Goal 3 of leaving no one behind.
Botswana is one of few countries in Africa where homosexuality is legal. Before the recent court ruling, engaging in same-sex activity was punishable by up to 7 years in prison. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Haburoni, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello. I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.